Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Welcome to the Top Order Podcast. We've got time for a quick Ashes checkpoint. We're 6 weeks away from the scheduled start of the series, 8th of December. But we've got some unanswered questions that we're going to run through. A little bit about the squads, the grounds, the banter, and Benjamin Stokes. All coming up on the Top Order Podcast. Stay tuned. Lippy, you want to set the scene, I think, with a little bit of an Australian and English view on this. So I'll hand over to you before we dip into some of the topics of the day.
Yeah, look, I guess for me, the big question I have is around, I suppose, what the Ashes actually means to you guys. Because I know we've touched on it a little bit in previous episodes. And I think for a neutral, I absolutely love watching the Ashes. I was born in England. I always kind of, you know, living in New Zealand, you want Australia to lose every game. So I always have watched the Ashes and always wanted England to win. But I never really felt connected to it in the way that probably both of you do. And I suppose, you know, we've got a T20 World Cup on at the moment, and listeners might be thinking, what are you guys doing talking about the Ashes when we've got a World Cup going on? So I suppose I just thought it was worth you guys touching on, even, you know, is it more important to you as a fan that you win the Ashes instead of winning this T20 World Cup? Or, you know, has it lost any luster over the year with so much cricket that we see? You know, I think about the Bledisloe Cup, for example, is something that I used to love watching and it used to mean a lot to me. But now there's just so much rugby, there's so much super rugby that I don't really care for it anymore. So, you know, I'm just keen to hear what you think. Baldy, over to you.
I think there's room for both T20 cricket and Ashes cricket in the same calendar. So I'm looking forward. I'm really jazzed about the World Cup myself. But the Ashes is still the pinnacle of Test cricket. And I really have a newfound appreciation for, in 2021, just how hard it is to actually schedule and get a Test series like on the field for four or five Test matches. So if we can get four or five Tests, and to me the Ashes do need to be four or five Test matches. It's not a two Test or three Test series. It is a four or five Test or even six Test series sometimes if we think back to the early to mid-90s. Look, I'm looking forward to this series perhaps more than any series I have since 2006-07. Why? Because there's been really even contests over the last little period of time. Last series we played was drawn in England. Both sides have some uncertainty over their lineups, and the build-up for me coming into this Ashes series is as good as it has been for the last 15 years. I'm looking forward to this series as much as I have for any series I think that I can remember since 06-07 when we got it handed to us in England and we had to bounce back from that.
I definitely think that it can fit with the T20. I look at the Ashes in a slightly different way in that in the UK, when it's at home, I feel a massive sense of excitement, like Christmas morning. I would always catch the train down to Lords on the first day of an Ashes Test match, have bacon and eggs on the train and get to Lords nice and early, have a cup of coffee, drink in that sort of atmosphere before hitting the Pims at around about 11 o'clock in the morning, just as the first ball is bowled. The return series, though, and to pick up on Baldy's point, it has to be a five-test series. And in Australia, it has to be at Brisbane, Perth, Sydney, Melbourne and Adelaide, not necessarily obviously in that order. In fact, the order is, has been set almost in stone, with Brisbane being that sort of opening fortress until the Indians breached it last year for such a long time. It's a bit more like the hurt and the build-up of being an England soccer fan, though, watching that overseas Ashes series. You don't think you're ever going to win. It's the hope that kills you. Save 2011 or 2010, 2011, going back to the last time England won that, and a long time before that, since we won it. I think 84, 85, wasn't it, when famously British journalists had said England can't bat, bowl or field. And then Chris Broad and Ian Botham and a host of others really turned the tables on Australia, going back, before I was really walking around properly.
Well, you've got a character in Broad that can do a lot of damage to the Australian batting lineup and the top order in particular. This England squad, Adam, we've talked about it on a previous show, but just recapping, how comfortable are you with it? And what do you see in terms of this Lions squad that's been announced now and the players that are in that? Is that going to provide you enough backup and enough depth to get Australia in trouble in this Ashes series? What do you think?
Well, we're going to do a preview, I think, so this isn't really the time to sort of go into the squad in too much detail, and we've talked about it already before. Whether or not we're going to be anywhere like a chance of winning the series, look, I've made my point pretty clear on that. I don't think we will with this attack. The Lions squad is pretty much as expected. The only real surprise for me that Liam Livingstone doesn't get a look in. I think when you've got that ability to bring, I think, 14 additional players in that Lions squad across to Australia to provide a little bit of warm-up opposition and perhaps draft someone in, why wouldn't you pick some guys that could bring real impact if you needed them to? Three or four test matches into that series, an explosive batsman like Liam Livingstone, or some genuine pace, with the likes of Brydon Carson and Saqib Mahmood, who are in that squad. So I think that they certainly add a little bit of firepower. But I think that, we'll come on to it a little bit later. But Stuart Broad has come out with some comments in the press, even over the course of the last couple of days, depending on what's going to happen across Australia and the different federal systems that might impact how England and Australia move around Australia during this Ashes series, which might become a moot point as vaccination rates get hit, but who knows. But Broad has predicted that he wouldn't be surprised to see some players return home. And of course, some high-profile England players returning or leaving Ashes tours in very recent history. Marcus Trescothick in 2006-07, Jonathan Trott in 2013. 14, and Graham Swann as well, pulling the pin after the Adelaide Test match in that same series as well.
Yeah, the venues are the really big unanswered question at the moment. And I think for listeners who aren't familiar with the Australian political system, and to be honest, why would you be? Australia has both a federal government and a series of big state governments that, and the state governments actually have control over their own borders. So some states in Australia, like Brisbane and particularly like WA, are effectively quarantining people at the state boundary. So you can't actually travel with freedom throughout Australia. New Zealand listeners will be familiar with the kind of boundaries that we have around the Auckland region and Northland region and down into the Waikato now to try and control COVID. But, you know, the Australian state governments have boundaries and quarantine state to state, which could dictate, again, as you say, Adam, how teams move around Australia. Are we going to see a border restriction and quarantine restrictions in WA mean they miss out on a test match? Earlier in this week, Tasmania was firming as potentially a test venue to replace the Perth test. However, they're now talking about having a lockdown. Queensland in the last 48 hours have announced that they're intending to have overseas travellers come into the country with very little to no quarantine sometime in the month of November. So all of this stuff is changing rapidly. Sydney has announced an easing of restrictions plan. and Melbourne is still the most locked down city in the world. So we've got this real kind of variability around venues. It's all very up in the air, but I think Cricket Australia will want that first test in Brisbane because of the conditions and the advantage that Australia have had up until recently against England in those conditions, Raj.
So there's a whole heap of variables in there, Baldy. We're going to need a whiteboard to figure out what the best way is to actually have this tour. But at the moment, they're talking about doing the Gabba, Adelaide, MCG for Boxing Day, Sydney, and then Perth. So fairly standard-ish. What is the likelihood of that actually staying that way?
Well, we don't really know. That's the tough thing, because we've had so many different kind of flare-ups and outbreaks in Queensland, in New South Wales. It's just gone, you know, massive. Victoria is still locked down. For me, those New South Wales and Victoria, where there's still very high case numbers, are concerning in terms of the outbreak. The real concern for me in terms of all of those venues you've mentioned is the hard state boundary and quarantine with Western Australia. Western Australia have taken a very hard line stance around managing COVID, which I think is going to really impact whether or not they're even going to allow players to come in to that state. If they do allow players in, it may only be at the start of the tour to do a 14-day quarantine and then they play the first test and move on. But I don't think that's going to be particularly palatable for the England squad that are touring. I think they want to have a much more relaxed, less stressful quarantine period. I think they've got a golf resort on the Gold Coast earmarked for that quarantine period or around that Gold Coast hinterland area. So I don't think that at the moment, unless something changes, we'll see a test match in Perth. That's my personal view. I don't have any mail on that. But just looking at the situation as it is, I don't see us playing a test in Perth, which I think, to me, advantages England a little bit because Australia had the attack to exploit that.
Yeah, you took the line of questioning out of my mouth there, Baldy. So I guess I'll come to Binksy on this. Stuart Broad's been in the media talking about the Gabba being a real equaliser there for the English, with having a little bit of movement for their seam bowlers. Which grounds do you think, or do you as an English fan, want to see drop off the schedule? And what grounds do you want to see maybe double ups at, double headers at?
Yeah, look, I think I'll answer it in the second way and talk about the double ups. I'd like to see 5-day night test with the pink ball at Adelaide with Jimmy Anderson and Stuart Broad running amok, and we can sack off the Gabba. We can definitely sack off Perth. And with England's spin stocks, I think we'll get rid of the SCG as well. And we've talked about those drop-in pitches at Melbourne. A little bit better last year, but they've been like rolled snot in previous years. So I don't mind missing off that big concrete stadium, which just has a real lack of tradition for me. But if that doesn't get it right...
You're really consistent in your approach there, Binksy, haven't you? You've been real consistent in that hatred of the MCG. What have you got against the G, mate?
Well,
come on.
Mate, I actually spent a very enjoyable 4 days at the G in 98-99. When Steve Waugh decided to, you know, bat for his average rather than his team, which saw Dean Headley take six for and get England across the line. So one of the only grounds I've seen an Ashes victory at in Australia. So, yeah, look, I guess it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, my hatred of the G. But in all seriousness, I think it would be Perth and it would be Brisbane if there were any to drop off the list for me. And really like to see that Christmas New Year period across Melbourne and Sydney. That's, you know, the tradition, isn't it? I mean, the UK, it always used to be when I lived there, you would be Christmas night, actually, 25th of December, you'd be sitting on your couch with a belly full of pigs in blankets, turkey and Christmas pudding, and you'd be trying to stay awake until midnight when that test match started. Slightly different here. It's Boxing Day and you're kind of getting up 11 in the morning and sticking it on the TV in sweltering heat, hopefully here in a non-lockdown Auckland if we get there. I'm going to throw to you, Lippy, about the banter leading into the series. What's the impartial view? I'm sure Baldy and I have got a take on that, but certainly a lot of press leading into, you know, 6 or 7 weeks out from the season, or the series, I should say.
Oh, I love the banter. I mean, that's just it's fantastic for me. I think what was interesting about in recent times is that the English side, I saw Jimmy Anderson coming out and saying, you know, that he was surprised that it was happening, really, and sort of all the goading of the English players to come. And it's a fair point. You know, you've got guys on the English side. We talked about it many times, and even in our World Cup preview, about how many, you know, how this is starting to take a toll on the English players and how much quarantining they've had to do and the toll that it's taking on their mental health. And then you've got the Aussies having a crack at them, saying, look, the Ashes are going to be on. They start on December 8th, you know, whether Joe's here or not, or whatever that line was, whether it was taken out of context or not. But, you know, as a neutral, it's great to see. But, you know, whether it has an impact on the players, you sort of think that generally it doesn't. But when people are snapping back at each other, there obviously is going to be a little bit of fire in this series.
Yeah, I think if I was an English player, the one that would have got me was actually David Warner showing empathy towards the English players of the bubble. That would freak me out the most, I think. But yeah, Tim Payne saying what he did in the media, it's all fun and games. And it's interesting. I feel like he hasn't really learnt from India last year, where things went wrong with Ashwin towards the end of that series. But I actually think England need to come into this and actually fight fire with fire. The reason I say that is coming from New Zealand's perspective. When we went over there and we were the nice guys, we got absolutely ridden over rough shot there. The only one that was really, really successful was Neil Wagner. And he came in and he really blazed a trail with us in terms of him being very stoic and being that enforcer. So I really want to see that from England going forward. I love the banter, to be honest. Over to you guys.
Yeah, look, I don't mind the banter at all. I think... I do take offence at Tim Payne's comments. And look, I respect the fact that he's never got a franchise cricket gig. So obviously he's got to look after the bank balance and he's got a radio show before he's retired from Test cricket to probably ease into that media career and boost the quaffers a little bit, because he's not going to get a gig smashing it round on the world stage. But look, in all seriousness, I thought his comments... about Joe Root just needing to get on the plane and shut up and the Ashes would go on with or without him, showed a real lack of empathy for a situation where even if he wants to kind of stir the hornet's nest a little bit, I think he should be sort of reflecting on the fact that Australia have been really good in terms of their response to coronavirus by and large. We've talked about the way that they've locked down to keep cases in a relatively manageable way. Their team haven't really stepped off their shores to play Test cricket at all during this pandemic. So for me, I think he probably should have just tempered those comments ever so slightly and shown a little bit of empathy for a fellow professional. That said, I think England played it very, very well. They didn't want to sort of say what their demands were to the Australian cricket board. They didn't want to sort of exert their authority. I would imagine most of the players are pretty keen to get on the plane, but they didn't want to show that weakness of saying, look, come all hell or high water, we'll be on that plane. They wanted to make sure that they were going to get that Victorian country club for the wives and girlfriends and children to have a little bit of a holiday before the season or the series started and to move around in relative comfort. So I think they've played it pretty well.
Baldy, I'll just throw to you now. You probably want a bit of a response to that, this little bit of Aussie bashing. But before I do that, I just want to say that as a neutral, I am quite enjoying Tim Payne. I actually, he's starting to become a character and actually a bit of a likable character, even though I did say that Binksy before about, you know, maybe he did overstep the line with that kind of stuff. But he actually seems like someone who has a bit of humour around him, and he's actually come out a couple of times and kind of made a joke about the stuff that he said in the past that has come back to bite him, certainly in terms of the World Test Championship. He then came on the New Zealand radio and kind of made a joke of himself. So I do think he is winning himself a few fans on that front. But Baldy, defend Australia. It's over to you now.
Oh, if it's up to me to defend Australia, we're in pretty dire straits. Look, most Australians will have thick skin and the banter won't affect them too much. I think most of the Australian team will welcome a bit of banter. There's going to be some chat in this series, no doubt about it. I think the Australians will benefit from that banter a little bit more than the English, because they've got characters like David Warner in their side who perform better when that banter's on. They may not look good doing it, but it does actually help him get into the contest. So I don't think Australia will shy away from that banter. I agree with you, Adam, insofar as Australia could show a little bit more empathy with the touring situation, given that they haven't played a lot of Test cricket overseas and some of their big stars haven't been overseas in those COVID kind of bubbles as much. Some of them have, but some of them haven't. And you're right that Tim Payne hasn't been in too many overseas bubbles, particularly in franchise cricket. But look, all of that kind of stuff aside, I think this series is shaping up to be really, really good in terms of the banter. I just want to see it be positive and witty banter rather than just kind of mindless sledging, because that's not really beneficial and it doesn't really paint cricket in a great light. But I think if the series is played in good spirit where there's a little bit of friction there, I'm really looking forward to it.
Okay, Baldy, we know pretty much who is on the plane coming over from England, fingers crossed. What does the Aussie squad look like? What's the outlook for them? If you had to pick a 14-man squad today, who would definitely be in it?
I think 9 of the 11 spots in that Australian side picked themselves for the first test match, wherever it's going to be. And there's 2 spots that I think are up for grabs at the moment. One is Will Pukowski's opening spot that is now a big question mark, huge, massive question mark around who's going to open the batting with David Warner in the first test. And there's so many different candidates that we can choose from. I'm not even going to go into all of them in detail, but I reckon there's probably 6 or 7 candidates that the Australian selectors will be looking at in terms of their opening position. There'll be a Marsh. There might even be 2 Marshes that they're looking at. Usman Khawaja's name is going to come up. If you're talking about bolters for the squad, you start looking at guys like Bryce Street from Queensland. There are guys in Western Australia that are starting to put their hands up and making runs. And of course, the Victorian and New South Wales players haven't even played state cricket yet. So guys like Marcus Harris haven't even had a chance to get out and have a bat yet to be able to put their name up. The other spot on the side that's still massively up for grabs is that number 5 spot. It was Matthew Wade's last year during the test series. He opened and then slotted down to number 5. I think that Matthew Wade over the course of the year hasn't gone up in that reckoning. But yeah, that's going to be the real question for me. Who's batting at number 1 and who's batting at number 5?
Do we reckon that there's going to be any big surprises, Baldy, particularly coming off this T20 World Cup? Are there going to be players, you know, there's been a lot of players actually stepping down from the international sides. Are there going to be any players that say, look, you know, on the Aussie side that say, look, you know, I'm kind of need a bit of a rest now. I feel like they've had a lot of rest. But, you know, do we think anything is going to be surprising on that front?
I think we will, only because I'm so certain that there won't be. I'm so certain that there won't be any surprises and that no one will step down. I think it's almost certain that I'm wrong and that something like that will happen. But if you have a look at the bowling attack, Stark well-rested, Cummins well-rested, Hazelwood relatively well-rested, had a good IPL, will play well in the T20 World Cup. Nathan Lyon well-rested. Assuming those guys can get out of quarantine and get some match fitness, that bowling attack's going to be ready to go. The things that we want to keep an eye on are guys like James Pattinson from Victoria, Mark Steckerty, Michael Neeser, who's going to be that backup bowling attack that's going to carry Australia through a big 5 test series? And then who's going to work their way into that middle order? Is it going to be Travis Head? Is it going to be Mitchell Marsh? Are we going to have a bolter at the top of the order? I can't see anyone pulling out of that World Cup, of that Ashes squad, particularly of the guys who have been to the T20 World Cup squad. So, look, let's watch this space over the next 35 to 40 days in the lead up to this Ashes side, this Ashes series, I should say. But there's big question marks over that middle order. I think there are 10 spots locked in, and there are 4 that are definitely up for grabs, and there could be any number of up to 12 cricketers, I think, vying for those 4 spots.
Baldy, another great segue there. Watch this space. That probably comes to finish us off with watching this space in terms of Ben Stokes' Instagram. We see him the other day hitting balls. If this COVID situation kind of keeps to improving in terms of vaccination numbers and the restrictions dropping in Australia, Binksy, do we hold out any hope for the English fans that Ben Stokes could be out there and on that tour at some point?
Well, look, it's just got echoes of a number of Ashes series for me. Andrew Flintoff's fitness leading, I think, into that 2002-2003 season was in question. The same again with Ben Stokes, although for different reasons. He obviously went into a little bit of trouble after a Bristol nightclub incident and missed out on that Ashes tour in 2013-2014, and history repeating itself 7 years later. I think the pragmatist in me says that Ben Stokes has got a deal with Gunnar Moore and with Red Bull, and you know, his Instagram channel is a perfect place to just maintain a few little plugs for the brands that he supports, and that we shouldn't read too much into that. But there is a little bit of me hoping that that finger starts to improve and we start to see him in full kit next week, smashing it on the bowling machine and then bringing in some net bowlers. And then, of course, Baldy's touched upon it with that state and federalised government system. We can see the headlines, can't we? leading into that vital New Year's test period, with perhaps the Sydney Premier deciding not to grant Ben Stokes travel into the city limits, so he can't take place and bring the Ashes home at the SCG over New Year's.
Well, I'll get you a tinfoil hat so you can hold all of those conspiracy theories in your head, Adam. It's going to be a cracking build-up to the Ashes. There's no doubt about it. The banter, the mind games have started already, and that's just on this podcast. I think this is probably a good time to wrap it up before Adam and I go at each other's throats virtually over the Zoom call. Mate, it's been great bantering about the Ashes with you. I'm really looking forward to the series more than I have for a long, long time. Thanks, Stewie and Raj, for bearing with us as we gear up for the Ashes 2021-22. Thanks for listening, everyone, on the Top Order podcast. We've had a ball talking about the Ashes, and there'll be plenty more to come, as well as many other episodes. But for now, good night, God bless, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.